Hi, everybody. It is Dr. Sarah Gottfried, author of The Hormone Cure. I help women balance their hormones naturally regardless of age, and I'm so excited to be on the line with a mentor, a woman who has inspired me for years and years, Danielle Laporte. We're doing an expert interview, and we're talking to Danielle today about the intersection of desire and your hormones. So I'm going to say a quick hello to Danielle. Danielle, hi, are you with us?
Hi, I am with you. I am stoked.
I'm stoked, too. So happy you're here. I'm going to give a little bio, some of the street cred on Danielle. Danielle Laporte is the creator of the Desire Map program. She's the author of the Firestarter Sessions, which was published with Random House. She's the co-creator of Your Big Beautiful Book Plan. She's an inspirational speaker, former think tank executive, business strategist, and she writes weekly at DanielleLaporte.com, where she has over 1 million visitors who've gone for her straight-up advice. And this site has been deemed the best place online for kick-ass spirituality. It's also been named one of the top 100 websites for women by Forbes. Danielle lives in Vancouver, in Canada, in British Columbia. And I wanted to tell you a couple of things about her. I just asked her, okay, with your bio, tell me a few things that maybe people don't know about you. And she said, well, I've never had a cup of coffee. And good shoes change everything. And when your bra and panties match, you have a better day.
Mm-hmm.
So, Danielle, welcome.
Scientifically proven.
Scientifically proven. I think it balances your cortisol, actually. I mean, definitely avoiding the cup of coffee does. But the good shoes, we know that raises oxytocin and lowers your cortisol.
I knew there was something to it.
Exactly. So, Danielle, I wanted to talk to you about desire and to kick off by just talking about how many mission-driven women, whether they're entrepreneurs or stay-at-home moms, become burnt toast. It's as if we're wired to push ourselves so hard, to give until we drop, to overcare, overprovide, as Jennifer Loudon talks about. Can you tell us about desire and how that changes everything?
Desire is everything. We are desirous creatures. Nothing that has ever been manifested, that came into form, that's been built or constructed or made or launched, happens without desire. And it doesn't even need to be deep, rabid, well-thought-out desire. This is, you know, everything we eat and bring into our homes and wear and buy and what comes out of our mouths, the people we hang out with, are all choices because we have a desire. And my belief is that that driving desire is the desire to feel good. And that's the most simple way of putting it, just the desire to feel good. Now, there's all sorts of layers under there. So I think you get, you know, the more specific you get about how you want to feel, the more powerful you are. But getting clear on how you want to feel is, you know, potentially revolutionary for your life.
I completely agree with that. And I remember when I first did your Firestarter sessions, I love that task of, mm-hmm. you know, you asked, how do you want to feel? Let that guide you. And for folks who are listening who are maybe not as familiar with your work, what do you suggest as maybe the first step to unpack that, to really step into, you know, how do you want to feel? How do you sort of approach that or introduce it to folks?
I'll just give you the whole process right now. So desire mapping is the process. That's how we say process in Canada.
Thank you for the translation.
What I encourage people to do is you look at your life in categories. So there's five categories that I see. One is wellness, obviously. Wellness, rest and relaxation, body, how you take care of yourself. And you can call these areas whatever you want because it has to feel good. They have to resonate with you. The other area is relationships, romantic relationships, familial, societal, community relationships. The other is money, wealth, vocation, career, your job, cash, again, whatever you want to call it. And then you need to leave a section for just stuff, for the material stuff in your life, since it drives so much of our lives. It's like, I mean this in a positive way. So it's your car, it's your home, it's your clothes, it's the artwork you buy, it's your gear, it's your MacBook Pro. It's like the stuff you want to own. And then at the center of those four areas is you. And this is, you know, this term, whatever you use, has really got to resonate with you. So it's like, it's your essential self, it's your inner self, it's your original self, it's your soul. It's like just, you know, fucking awesome you. And then the first step is you go through all of those areas of your life and you ask yourself how you want to feel. And you do just a stream of consciousness about, you drill down and get more sort of finessed about this, but how do you want to feel when you look at your bank account? How do you want to feel when you get dressed in the morning, when you walk into the office, whatever it is? And then the next step is pattern recognition. So I can guarantee you that the same desired feelings will come up again and again in every area of your life. You will see repetition. And, you know, how you want to feel in terms of your money, it is the same way you want to feel when you're at your best in relationship and your clothes and your artwork and your job and all of it. And then ideally you're going to get that list down to 4, 5, 6 core desire feelings. And once you get there, then the work, or the, let's say the liberation, really begins. And it becomes a practice where you look at your core desire feelings every day and every week and every quarter, or, you know, once a year, and you think, what am I going to do today or this quarter to generate those core desired feelings? And that's it. And that's the practice, and that changes everything. It completely turns goal setting inside out.
So, Danielle, when I hear you talk about this, what I love about it, you know, as I listen as a yoga teacher, as a mom, as a entrepreneur, as a hormone expert, what I love about this desire map is that I believe it changes your relationship to stress, your relationship to cortisol, that mean stress hormone, what I call the bad boyfriend hormone, you know, that you knew maybe in high school or college you shouldn't have dated that guy. Mm-hmm. Cortisol's a lot like that. Like, you indulge it, you know it's going to end badly. And I love the desire. The desire map really changes that dance with stress, with cortisol. Can you explain why that is? I mean, I just feel ease sort of hearing you talk about the process.
Well, this is the thing. Ease is the magic word. Like, the main sort of feedback, like the vibe I'm getting from everybody around doing this is relief. And the response is like, so I don't have to zealously chase goals. No, you don't. I don't have to be like overly determined. No, you don't. This is really, really like, this is really, my existence is about me just feeling good. Yes, it is. So like, huge relief. This is what I think happens. And, you know, I'm just now sort of making more connections to stress and cortisol. This is why I'm so glad like you and I are having this conversation, is when you have those, like, you know, do or die goals, you're going to die. They're going to kill you. Mm. So my motto now is like, fierce but flexible. And it's completely paradoxical. You know, it's so uncomfortable to be there, but you have to be completely devotedly focused and committed to your goals and to your intentions and the things you're going after. And then you need to let go of how it works out and if it's even going to work out. So how it shifted for me is, my goal is my preferred feelings. That is the only singular intention. Everything else is just sort of like the sidecar. Like, I want to feel affluence, and I want to feel abundance, and I want to feel sexy and all those things. I mean, those aren't necessarily my core desired feelings, but just to sort of get a range of ideas out there for people, but I want to feel those things, and I know that to feel those things, I'm going to create books, and I'm going to get on stage, and I'm going to pick my kid up at 3 o'clock, and I know the things I have to do and have to feel that way, but writing the book doesn't become my taskmaster. You know, what drives me is just do whatever you got to do to feel that sense of abundance. So I might change course in the middle of it and not write the book and decide that, you know, what would make me feel most abundant is, you know, taking a week off. Mm. So the beauty of it is the form, that doesn't always take the form you want it to, but you end up where you want, which is the preferred state. Feeling the way you want to feel is the whole point. I mean, I could just have an audio that replayed that 100 times for people. Feeling the way you want to feel is the whole point.
Mm-hmm. The new mantra.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I love that you're knitting together these ancient ideas, right? This, you know, mm-hmm. sort of the comfort with paradox that we have, especially from ancient Indian culture, from, you know, from Ayurveda, and also the detachment, the letting go. I know for you that you write in such a iconic way. It's incredibly modern. You make ideas just so fresh and interesting. And I would say I hear embedded in the desire map some of the ancient studies that you've done.
Mm-hmm,
I know
mm-hmm,
that you practice mm-hmm. yoga, you've studied Buddhism. Can mm-hmm. you speak to that a bit?
I can speak to it really generally and say that I'm not saying anything new, right? Some of this is 2,000 years old, but I'm putting it through my lens and my experience and in a really contemporary way. And that's why it's working. So, like, you know, 8 years ago, I sat down on New Year's Eve by the fireplace. I wrote up my so-called goals, and I was completely and entirely uninspired. And when I was like, who cares about paying off the MasterCard or getting to Hawaii? Like, that's like fueling my soul, right? But when I attach those things to feelings like being in communion and connected and prosperity or whatever they were at the time, it totally changed everything. So that's sort of the contemporary experience of all of this. And the deeper stuff, the more ancient stuff is, you know, Buddhists are divided about everything. So half of Buddhists will tell you that, you know, desire is the root of all suffering. Desire is the root of all suffering. Well, let me just wrap my head around that. and I agree that, and I think that's true. In some respects, I think to be over-desirous, to be attached, it's that zealous chasing of the goal. There's suffering is inevitable. It's inevitable in that scenario. But I also, you know, this is another kind of 50-50 with the Buddhists. The Buddhists believe that your true nature is joy. Your true nature, like your essential self, original self, your soul, is the stuff of joy. So then your whole life just becomes about, it's a pleasure, it's the motivation is pleasure. Mm-hmm. And we could get into a whole analysis about the difference between joy and pleasure and happiness, but just let's lump them all together for the sake of this. So if that's the case, then it really is about feeling good. So then I just kind of bring those two together in a way that works for me, which is I desire to feel good. I will do whatever it takes to feel the way I want to feel.
Hmm. Well, it works for you, and it works for thousands of people. I mean, I've been mm-hmm. so thrilled listening to your modern interpretation of these concepts for years. I think I first mm-hmm. heard about you in 2010. Another piece I'm hearing is that the desire map may be the best possible thing you could do for your DNA. So let me explain what I mean. We know that up to 80% of how your genes are expressed in your body is determined by what's called epigenetics, and that just means non-DNA forces. Sort of, I think of it as how you eat, move, think, and supplement. That affects how you feel and how your DNA is expressed. And so part of what I'm hearing from you is that the desire map is a way to create a good neighborhood in your body, from your cells to your soul, as opposed to the bad neighborhood, you know, the bad neighborhood where you don't have kale, you don't have green smoothies, you don't have fresh air, you're surrounded by toxins, you don't have enough pleasure, joy, happiness.
It's the ghetto, yeah.
The ghetto, exactly. It is where you have the drive-by shootings. You know, you're addicted to sugar, maybe, or addicted to something else that is not allowing you to connect to your deepest desires. So I love this idea of the good neighborhood versus the bad neighborhood. It's kind of our latest thinking about how you create the best life ever, how you really step into a dance with stress that serves you better. And so I'm super excited that I'm seeing this for the first time, sort of the epigenetic influence of the desire map.
I'm excited that you're seeing it. Because I don't even know what you see.
Well, let me describe it another way. So I really believe, especially for the women who are listening to this, I imagine we've got some guys who are going to listen too, but for the women who are listening, and especially those of you who are mothers, maybe you're mothers to a cause, mothers to a child, or mothers to a pet, we are wired, especially when we're in our reproductive years, you know, before that final menstrual period when you're 50 or so, we are wired to overprovide, overcare. And I believe that one of the best ways to reverse that, you know, to get into a place where you're creating a good neighborhood is with the desire map, with stepping into pleasure, joy, and happiness. I feel like that's so important. And there's actually science behind this. There's science showing that when you're connected to pleasure, joy, happiness, desire, it repairs, for instance, your adrenal glands, those cute little glands in your mid-back that secrete cortisol as well as most of your sex hormones. Like that really amplifies the repair conversation every night so that you wake up feeling more restored. So I'm just trying to connect kind of the biology to the desire map. How am I doing so far?
So good. I need to interview you. My part of my, quote, practice of desire is that every night before I go to bed, I state my core desired feelings, and every morning before I get out of bed, I state my core desired feelings. And I just want to say for the record, I don't do this every night. Like, I don't do anything every day. And so if I don't, there's no criticism of like, oh, I didn't pray today, I didn't sit today, I didn't whatever. So, and what I think happens when I do that is I'm sending a signal to my psyche that, so a couple things. It's okay to want what I want, that desire is positive, and that I have what it takes to create what I want. And I also believe, and this gets into like this is a belief system, I mean, it's all a belief system. I also believe that when one makes a declaration of desire, it has a double whammy effect of it. It's also a prayer. So it's telling your psyche, this is what I desire, I have the capacity to go get it, and you're sending a signal to the universe that you would like some support in going to get that. So that is nothing but pleasurable. And I've also found, and this is my most direct insight about the direct benefit of being clear on your desires and alleviating stress. The story I've got around this is, you know, being in the kitchen, having the same argument that I was always having with my now former husband and thinking to myself, well, this is what happens for most of us. This is what happens for me when we're in that kind of state of suffering. So first of all, you've got to acknowledge that you're suffering. You're angry, and that's a drag. you're not where you want to be. The other person is not where you want to be. You're, like, not in a great place. And then what we tend to do is the monkey mind starts to chatter. And you go into, like, they're a jerk, I'm a jerk, I'm a jerk for thinking they're a jerk. And then you go into all the reasons they're a jerk or you're a jerk. Oh, it's my family of origin stuff. This is my father issues. This is his mother issues, blah, blah, blah. And shoulda, woulda, coulda, we already been through this. And then you go into how you're going to fix yourself in the situation. And this can all happen, by the way, in the span of like 30 seconds. And, you know, and I think, well, I need to go to yoga tonight. I need to change my therapy appointment from like Friday to Tuesday. If I were only. Okay, so that's often our response. It's like a combination of criticism and fix it to that kind of stress and suffering. And that response actually does nothing to alleviate the suffering. Mm. Even if it's true, even if it's all true that, yeah, you should go to yoga or it's your father issues or whatever, doesn't help. What does help, however, at least what helps me, is to, in those moments, get in that place of declaring how I want to feel. So in that toughness, I just stop, take a breath. Maybe I always don't even have time to take a breath, but if I can even just have the thought form of, I want to feel in communion, I want to feel joy, I want to feel affluence, I want to feel feminine, I want to feel creativity. Those all happen to be my core desire feelings. Then immediately the monkey mind chatter stops. So at least I stop the cycle of stress. And then I feel a sense of possibility, and I stepped out of being a victim, or at least, you know, even just more generally, just being in that negative place, into like I want something. Wanting is that is desire is its own form of action in a way. So I moved out of victim into the creator, and brings your stress level down. You also, when you're in that place of, you know, less stress and you're in that place of possibility thinking, you will act differently. You will do smarter things. So you won't pig out. You won't lash out. Or you might pig out and you might lash out, and those are the positive things for yourself to do. But I find you make better choices when you're really clear on how you want to feel.
Oh, my gosh.
I know,
so
we could
good.
Talk forever, because I have like 10,000 questions for you about, like, so what does that do to my adrenals?
Well, yeah. So you just described, you know, as I sort of translate it into the biology, you know, how I have kind of a disease around that. I love to do this. So what I'm hearing you say, in that moment where you're triggered, and we've all been there with someone that we love, especially an intimate partner.
Yeah.
You know, when I was in my 30s, for instance, I used to do this quite a bit with my husband, and I blamed him. I had that victim mentality. I was reactive. I would get really entrenched. And I love how you described that combination of self-criticism and fix-it.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're in that place where we're triggered, we're not resourceful, we're in that part of our brain where, you know, some people call it the reptilian brain. I actually hate that term. I think it's so disgusting. But doesn't it just sound creepy?
It does sound creepy. Like I'm gonna have a long tail and some talons. Yeah.
Exactly. Lizard eyes. I had someone else describe it as the Labrador part of the brain. I think that's a little bit sweeter, but it's harder to kind of tap into that triggered feeling that many of us feel. So it's this, you know, sort of lower brain. That's another term that I use for it. It's the lower brain. It's your amygdala, that place where you are scanning your environment all the time for danger and, you know, if a tiger's going to start chasing you. So we're in that less resourceful part of our brain. And what you're saying is, you know, you just need a small crack. Just like open the door a teeny bit. And say to yourself, declare, how do I want to feel? How do I want to feel? As you said, in communion, feminine, creative, I want to feel joy. And it bumps the conversation from your lower brain to your higher brain. It bumps it to what's called your prefrontal cortex, where you are more resourceful. You do act differently. You are able to make choices like, I think I'll have a green smoothie instead of, mm-hmm. I think I'll eat this vegan donut or maybe three. So yeah. I love this. I mean, I love you are doing this pattern interrupt. And I think that
that's
so
exactly
powerful.
What it is. It's a pattern interrupt, and it's an injection of positivity.
And I think one of the key problems that women face, because we know that stress doesn't favor women the way that it favors men, just because of our biology. I think one of the key reasons why women feel overwhelmed or feel stuck, are not able to realize their dreams, is because of hypervigilance. I think it leads to, you know, this wayward cortisol. It's either too high or too low. It's not in the Goldilocks position. It leads to difficulty with sleep. It leads to us feeling cranky and maybe thinking that an antidepressant might be a good idea. And you're actually offering the alternative to the prescription. Like, your prescription, I think, is so much more powerful than Prozac or, you know, the latest antidepressant. So thank you for that. I think that's just a phenomenal pattern interrupt.
Well, I thank you. I have to just take that in because that's big stuff. But, you know, I write about this in the Desire Map. You probably have, I know you have something to add to this, but I was walking with a friend who had just gone off of antidepressants. So she'd been on various meds on and off for 5 years. And something really significant in her life had happened. Like she'd just lost a parent. And other things were going on. And I said, how do you feel? And she didn't know. And she genuinely did not know. And she said, I don't know if I'm feeling angry or sad. But it wasn't like someone who has never been on meds and has a full vocabulary feelings saying, I don't know, sometimes I'm happy, sometimes it's joy, it's anger, it's that, you know. It wasn't that kind of pondering. It was like genuine, I do not know what this is.
Yeah.
And it was very clear that there were a couple layers for her. One, she was genuinely confused. It'd been so long since she really had a full range of capacity to feel. It was just like she just got her feeler system back and was just trying it out again. And secondly, as who she was and raised, her vocabulary for emotions was not that great. And so it was like two things I saw. I saw like this really old, almost cultural dynamic we have of, you know, so many parents say, well, you're happy or you're sad. You're angry or you're not, you know. There's a lot more than that. And then just we've got this kind of modern phenomenon of being doped out of our emotions. Not to say I don't want to get any hate mail. I'm not necessarily against antidepressants. However, I think we use them, I think we go to them too easily, without enough thought, without trying enough other things. Yeah.
Amen.
I think they're a fallback that, and it's killing us. It's killing
ourselves. I completely agree with you. It's killing ourselves and our soul. I'm right there with you. I am not opposed to antidepressants when there's the right time and place for them. They are life-saving if you have severe depression. The problem is 1 in 4 women in the United States is taking an antidepressant.
What?
And yes, 1 in 4. And
that makes me want to weep.
And
wrong.
It's, you know, here's what troubles me so much. I want to pick up on some of the points you made. We know that most of those women, the 1 in 4, they're mostly struggling with stress, with hypervigilance, with cortisol. We know that 50% of people with depression have high cortisol. We know that 20% of people with depression have a problem with their thyroid, usually slow thyroid. And often no one bothered to check those levels. Mm. We also know that a lot of it has to do with being in that less resourceful, reactive, triggered place too much of the time and not able to step into the desire map, not being able to declare how it is you want to feel. We know that the vast majority of people who are taking these antidepressants have mild to moderate depression. And we know that antidepressants in that situation are worse than placebo. They cause weight gain, stroke. They just have been linked to an increased risk of breast and ovarian cancer. If you're pregnant and you're taking one, it's associated with an increased risk of preterm labor and seizures in your baby. And you're right. There's this, you know, we all deserve to have the desire map, the full emotional palette. And we live in a culture that's determined to throw a prescription pill at the problems that we have, and yet we're not getting to the root cause. That whole description of walking with a friend who didn't know how she felt, she'd been on an antidepressant for 5 years, we know that it changes your brain to be on these prescriptions. Mm-hmm. We know it makes you muted and flat, and it makes your dynamic range much more narrow. Mm-hmm. So I'm really glad you raised that point. My whole book, The Hormone Cure, is about let's look at the hormonal root cause. Let's start with the biology along with the work on the psyche, the emotions.
And this is what I love about the book. Like, I remember when I got, well, I got it before even the galley. So for anybody who's listening, the galley is like, it's the baby book that comes out before the finished book. And I was just, rooted, practical. It's like, oh, this is so basic. For me, it's basic because you bring in the whole conversation. It's just like, oh, well, now it all makes sense and all comes together. So,
thank you for that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I want to ask you, Danielle.
Oh, I want to say something. Hold on. I want to say something else about emotions. But go ahead with your question. It'll come back to me. Where are you at?
Well, you have been a very generous mentor to me for a long time. And when I think about the models that I have, that women have in the world, of how to put together work that's satisfying and helps us feel content and sort of keeps us on that desire map, keeps us in that place of being guided by how we want to feel. When I think about that and trying to balance it with other demands, such as being a mother, I can't think of anyone else besides you who has architected a life that really supports staying in connection to desire and being the kind of mom that you want to be, being involved in your son's life. So I was hoping you could share with our tribe a bit about how you structure your day, kind of how you architect your life. I mean, you talked about going to bed and kind of the core desire that you practice not every single night, but most nights. Can you tell us a little bit about how you craft your day?
Well, I'll preface this by saying that I think everybody thinks I'm busier than I actually am.
This is the best part. This is the best part. This is the punchline.
Like, I look productive, but really it's because I have a great staff. And, I mean, I don't even call them staff. I don't like that word. I have an incredible team of partners. So I have, works up to like two and a half women who are pulling it together with me. So there's that. It's all about delegating. And I'd also say, like, sort of entrepreneurial side note, I could keep way more money than I keep. I could wait, you know, have more of a net every year if I wanted to work harder, but I don't. So I think, you know, half of what I pay my team for is to create and to produce, and, you know, we're a service of the world, and that leads to revenue. And the other half is I pay them so that I can have the life I want, which is, I am able to pick my boy up at 3 o'clock most days. you know, right now he just walked into my studio and he grabbed my phone. We're going to school late today because we felt like having a quiet morning together. So when I get off the phone with you, I will walk my boy three blocks to school. So what does my day look like? My day looks like I'm clear on how I want to feel, my core desired feelings. I have a check-in with myself of what am I going to do that day to feel that way. And the range of how that looks is very different. Sometimes, you know, wanting to have a day where I feel a sense of affluence is about taking the day off. And sometimes it's about on being on the phone all day and, like, doing this, like, serious hustle, like, let's move some mountains here today and get a new deal or find a new distributor, whatever it is. But those core desired feelings always support sort of the state I'm in. You know, they really help me be present with where I'm at, where if I'm ebbing or I'm flowing, you know. And in terms of, like, really sort of practical time management, so let's be clear, like, my core desired feelings are my time management system, but in a more, physical, material way, I love batching my time. So I will have, like, one day in a week that is so scheduled and full of so much, it would, like, give a Clydesdale a heart attack. But I love it. So, like, it's the day I do 2 to 3 interviews. I run out and pick out something from Home Depot on the way to a meeting with a new designer. I leave the house. You know, I wake up, hair is up, best bra on, and away we go. And then, ideally, for at least the rest of the week, if not 3 days, I'm trying to really, really, truly get my work week down to 4 days. Really, I don't work. I mean, it's just so ebb and flowy that I probably only collectively work about 3 days a week. But I really need uninterrupted blocks of time. So if I want to write and meander and just think about things, and by the way, meandering is when I am the most effective, when I come up with the big ideas, the big solutions, who's getting on the bus next, all that. I need space to do that. So I could have the whole day clear, but if I have to take or make just one phone call, can throw off the whole flow. It sounds very, you know, highly sensitive artist, and maybe it is, but that's how I get shit done. I book nothing. Mm. Nothing I love more. Well, I love both kinds of days, but I love the days where I look and I go, oh, it's create day.
Yeah. Love that. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. What about when you travel? I'm curious about, you know, you're an international superstar. Let's just face it, and you travel a fair amount. I mean, it seems like about every other week you're in New York. I can see you tweeting and on Instagram. How do you do that with your son? With, you know, with all the, I really love the boundaries that you have and how your time management is your core desires. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious about what does that look like when you're traveling? Do you take your son with you? Like, how do you do that?
My trips are very, very quick. So if I can get in and out of a city in 2 days, then I do that. I try and get myself on their time zone before I go. So, like, if I'm going to the East Coast, I'll get up really, really early for, like, 3 or 4 days here so that I can be on in a very short amount of time when I'm there, like, hit the ground running. I'm very clear. I am not there to socialize. I am not there to see the sites or the best restaurant. No, I really want to do my gig, go back to my hotel room. And part of that is, you know, those boundaries are, so I'm in and out, and so I'm back for my son very quickly, and he stays at his dad's place. You know, we co-parent, so that actually has its benefits if you're on the road. But I'm also clear that when I'm available, when I go to do a gig, I actually stand up and say, use me up while I'm here. Take everything you can get from me. Like, I just did a gig in Minnesota, And it would, like, I gave this full day. It was this, like, 7-hour marathon. And I know that when I'm in that setting, people are going to talk to me at breakfast. They're going to talk to me when I'm in the ladies' room. And not just talk to me. They're going to be asking me big questions about their lives and their business and deep stuff about my life. And I completely and entirely surrender to that and enjoy it. Mm. But then I have boundaries around that. Like, when I'm done, I'm not there to go shopping. Just get me to the airport. I got to get home to my kid. Mm. And, you know, just in this recent trip I was just speaking of, like, I got snowed in. And sometimes, it's, you know, that was devastating for me to not be home at 7 o'clock the night I was planning to be home for my kid. I didn't get home till lunchtime the next day. That, you know, I sit in the airport and I'm having a hard time. And that's part of it, too.
And part of your process with the desire map is the detachment and not criticizing, not going to that place.
Yeah, you roll with it. It also helps me define what I want to do in the future, right? I'm just like, you know what? I've got to make some great money to leave the house, to leave my kid, and to deal with the thing, you know, possibly staying an extra day or two in a city I don't want to be in. Because I'm not with my boy. So it makes me say no to the next thing. Do I want to go, you know, here? No, not worth it. And by the way, I'll get a bigger umbrella over all of this. I do nothing for the money. Nothing. And that has nothing to do with having money or making money or being at a certain level. Wait a second, let me just get real here. Yes, I am in a position where I can say no to more, but even when I was making 50 grand a year and saving up to buy a house and had credit card debt, I learned the hard way to never do anything for the money. Whenever I did it for the money, it came back and got me. You talk about cortisol and stress levels. So I learned very, very early on, you can really only do it for the joy, and it's really cheesy, but guess what? Then the money comes.
Well, I think, to me, it's so much more powerful to not focus on the money. It's the wrong thing to chase, to focus on the emotion, the desire, like abundance, or even as you were describing how you're all in when you go somewhere to give a speech, how you... Mm-hmm. You give, you surrender to that. What I heard was that you're not giving from your core being. You're giving from, like, you've crafted your physiology, your psychic structure, so that you're giving from overflow. I should ask that as a question. Maybe I should ask that as a question. So what I'm hearing, you know, this is sort of a shamanic idea, that rather than giving from, like, this core place where you are more likely to miss it, you know, when you give away your energy from that core place that you really need, that you shouldn't be giving from, when you overgive from that place, it's not good for you. It gets you into that place of chasing the money and feeling scarcity. But when you fill your tank and you're giving from the overflow, I think that's so much more effective. So I should ask that more as a question, because I'm like hypothesizing about you without asking you if that's true.
No, that's a great way. I would just use a different word than overflow. I would say I'm giving from a place of devotion. And once you're devoted, you got a lot in your tank, you know, with a certain level of, like, love commitment. There's so much to give. Of course, you have boundaries and jet lag and all that stuff kicks in. But I'm just really, 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 I just metaphorically and literally, I just really open my arms up and just say, take everything I've got. I'm here to serve. And I love what happens when you say that and people step forward. I mean, for me, how that manifests is women are like, well, then I have this question. And I say, yeah, you have more questions, don't you know? And then someone has the courage to grab the microphone and ask their question. And someone has the courage to share their idea. where the courage just pull you aside and tell you their story. And all those things are so healing. But, yeah, I get into that place of here to serve, devoted, and here's the fine point on this. I asked for this. I asked for this life.
Mm.
So no complaints. This life involves airplanes and that. And if I have any resentment around that, then I better stop doing what I'm doing. Like, I have no patience, none, for celebrity, like Hollywood types, who complain about everything that comes along with their career. Really? Really, you're going to bitch about the paparazzi? I know it's unpleasant, but then you should stop making movies.
Mm.
Right? Are you laughing at me? My kid thinks this is funny for some reason. I think he just heard me swear on the radio. Yeah, it's just you signed up for this, then go into hiding, then just do theater. If you're really in it just to act, then just do theater. But come on, don't complain.
Oh, this is good. This is so good. And you're absolutely right that when you go into that place of resentment, it's that rabbit hole that starts to get your cortisol back into the bad boyfriend place. You know, we want to keep cortisol from making us bitchy, PMS-y, have more hot flashes, terrible sleep, all those create a bad neighborhood. You know,
mm-hmm.
I love that 12-step idea that if you have a choice between guilt or resentment, choose guilt. It's almost like if you have a choice between desire or stress, choose desire.
Mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm. Yep, yep. Such both great analogies. Yeah, yeah.
So I want to respect your time. I know you need to get your son to school. I love how you're walking
your
talk.
This is life, right? This is life.
Talking your walk. It's beautiful. I want to tell folks about a little bit more about your program, the Desire Map. And what I'll do is I'll give a URL at the end. But could you just tell us a little bit about what they get with the Desire Map? I mean, you've described the process today, but can you just give us a little, you know, kind of taster, a sampler?
Well, it's a program. It is a multimedia experience. And when I sat down to create it, I literally sat down in, like, meditative position in my office space and just thought, what do I want? You know, I created this desire mapping to various degrees of myself for like 8 years before I made this. Like, I was like, okay, it's time. I've been doing this. It works. I've run every girlfriend guinea pig I can through this process. I'm on to something big. Let's do this. And I thought, well, I never want a meditation that's more than 4 minutes long. In fact, I'd love something that's not even a meditation. It's more like a declaration. And it's a minute. Boom. That's what you get. You get minute-long audios to just help you stand up straight. I wanted something that was very digital and accessible online and on all my various devices, but was private. So you get that. So it's like you have part of the program is you get entry into this private portal where you can download the worksheets and the audios and the book for your Kindle and the whole audio version of the experience, which is like 7 hours of me and you in your kitchen or while you're driving. And then you actually get the printed book. And the book is two books in one. Book one is the theory and the philosophy behind desire and gratitude and dissatisfaction. And then book two, the reverse side, is the actual workbook itself, where you bring yourself through the process of getting clear on your core desired feelings in every area of your life. And then it all sort of culminates in a really practical process of like, okay, now what are your, quote, goals or your intentions or whatever you want to call them for this year or for this quarter? And then really practically speaking, like I desire map, you know, quote unquote desire map, 3 times a year. I do a desire map for New Year's. I do a desire map for my birthday in May, and I do a new desire map in the fall. So anytime's a good time to get clear. And also, and this isn't part of the desire map program, but everybody should know that if you go to Facebook and you do search for the desire map group, there's an open group. It's free for everybody. And the support there is just gorgeous. I'm so touched by how women are cheering each other on to use their core desired feelings in their relationships, and women are getting on there and just saying, hey, I just quit my job because I got clear one of my core desired feelings is freedom, and I'm doing this, that, and the other, and it's really great. So if you can't afford the $170 Desire Map program, which, by the way, you can pay for in 3 installments, just go on and you'll go on to the Desire Map group and you will figure it out.
Beautiful. So I want to tell folks who are listening that if you want to get the Desire Map, as you can tell, I totally recommend it. I love it. I think this is one of the best ways to guide you. I think this is a beautiful practice. I want you to go to this URL, tiny.cc/hormone desire map, hormone desire map. And we'll also have this on the page where you downloaded it, where you downloaded this audio with Danielle and me, so that you can see it there.
Give that URL again.
Absolutely. tiny.cc hormone desire map. I'll spell it for you quickly. tiny.cc/hormonedesireMAP.
Cool.
Oh, my gosh, Danielle. I know you need to take your son to school. Any final thoughts that you want to share with us? Oh, I wanted to say one quick thing about how you taught me, you motivated me to always give a portion of my online programs to charity. So I just wanted to add that piece in. And, you know, in the past I've seen you do many different charities over the years. Can you just say briefly, who are some of your favorite charities right now?
Who are some of my charities? Well, I still, from your Big Beautiful Book Plan program, we're still giving money to Right Girl. It's this organization in L.A. that helps the youth, I wouldn't say troubled, but young women who need a little extra help. It helps them learn about expressing, using their voice, going into communications programs in schools. We love that. I'm still a huge fan of Women for Women International. I think the work that Charity Water is doing is Nobel Prize worthy. And we collect money from every sale of the Desire Map. And what we're planning to do is in the next few months do a public vote about where that money goes. And I'm looking for the next cause. So, that's where I'm at.
Mine is fighting sex trafficking in North America. A lot of people think it exists, you know, mostly in India, Nepal, Asia, and it certainly does, but it also is right under our nose. Any final thoughts, Danielle? I want to respect your time.
Final thoughts. Want what you want with all your heart and do whatever it takes to make it real.
Love it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Danielle. I'm so honored to have this time with you, and thank you to your beautiful son for being so patient, and I'm glad you had a quiet morning with him. Can't wait to talk to you next time. Thank you, everybody, for listening to us. Danielle, hugest thanks.
Hugest thanks, Dr. Sarah. I learned so much. Well, I'm going to interview you, so thank you.
You know the answer is always yes. Okay, everybody, it's Dr. Sarah Gottfried. You can go to thehormonecurebook.com to learn more. Thank you, Danielle Laporte, for joining us today on the intersection of hormones and desire. Bye, everybody.